And so that is after the discussion, this will go up on our board options website and you'll be able to access it. But I want to introduce our facilitator tonight, Bob Nadel. Bob, hi. There you are.
Okay. Graham, hi.
Robert Nadel is founder and president of both Nadel Consulting Group, Inc. and Human Resources Spectrum. These companies incorporate compensation, benefits, and organizational effectiveness. Previously, Bob served as the Eastern Region partner for the Hay Group and the partner in charge of the New York office of the Hay Group. He was principal in charge of the New York office and the Eastern Region for the ABC practice at Deloitte. Bob was independent outside director of Hopog Digital Incorporated, traded on the NASDAQ as HOP, H-A-U-P. He was elected chair of the board's compensation committee. He's also served as an independent director for Ion Technologies and Noise Cancellation Technologies. And he's been named compensation advisor to public boards for nearly 100 companies. So Bob, would you like to take over as facilitator? And let me just ask people, did you like having five in a group or do you prefer four?
Five's great.
Okay, good.
That'll work, yeah.
Bob, take it all over.
Good. First of all, thank you, Marianne and Larry, for having me in this case discussion tonight. It was very instructive. Larry was amazing in helping me edit and write and collect my thoughts. It was not easy to do to pull a case together to get it. I wrote it and they said, here it is. You know, this is what I know. And four drafts later, it was so much better after we had worked together to think it through. So I want to thank the organization, for helping to focus on it. And thank you all for coming. So just to put perspective on it, it is a live case. I mean, not these details, but it is a live case. This actually happened. It was, and as someone asked in the breakout room, it was not a consolidation of two or three cases to make it, an interesting case. This is its own interesting case. It actually happened. I'm going to leave it at that. I would be interested in your own individual reactions. I think the first thing we should do is go around the room and get some quick reactions. Marianne, from the reporters first.
Yeah, you can choose to name the groups by number or ask for input. Usually the reporters report back and then the other members of the group chime in.
So let's do that. Let's follow the Stiebel Peabody way and have the reporters report, and then have everybody else chime in, and then I will take questions. And in those questions, I will give you what really happened.
So you have groups 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Robin, I was in your group, so I'm going to.
Excellent. Yes. Let me volunteer to actually give the facts of this particular case. So I think as we were discussing it in the group, we, I think, came to a unanimous decision that for the first question, would Dr. Dunbar, should she have accepted the role on the board? I think that we all said yes. I think we thought that it was kind of an interesting role, and you certainly don't know what the future is going to hold. I think that we sort of coalesced around a decision that we were surprised that the company survived so long, given that one founder was such a dominant personality. And we thought that the board should have been built out earlier. Though I actually commented that I thought for the start of the company, the composition of the expertise of the three board members seemed fine to me. You know, you had the head of the New York Stock Exchange, you had a CPA, and you had a lawyer. It seemed that as time went on, there definitely should have been more input.
Can I just say one thing? He wasn't the head of the New York Stock Exchange. He was the head of a New York Stock Exchange company.
Okay, sorry.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you for that. I think that we had someone raise the thought that they were surprised that when the company did go public, that sophisticated investors wouldn't have looked at the board and said that it was not really a functioning board and that there needed to be changes to the board at that point. I think we were all a little bit incredulous, actually, that that was truly what had happened. We thought that maybe that was a red herring that Bob threw in just to get us to talk. But he assured us that actually, in fact, investors did invest, though it was majority owned by the founders. We were curious about D&O insurance, and you know, we came to find out that there was D&O assurance, but you know, certainly there was discussion about whether shareholders in the company watching it depreciate in value so quickly and so precipitously wouldn't have started a shareholder action. And there was no mention of that. We definitely thought the board missed an opportunity to have a more diverse composition. We all felt that Wilson was the grown-up in the room and that he really probably didn't do his job effectively. Again, we felt that that was predominantly because Bradley was such a dominating type of figure, and also because I think, and Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, was Wilson Bradley's father's friend or Adam's father's friend?
He was Bradley's father's friend. Bradley's father had worked in the stock exchange listed company that Bradley had owned. So I'm sorry, that Bradley had run, that he was the CEO of. So
that might have been a little bit of.
It started out that, you know, in this newly formed company, that the three sort of friends who came as really non-independent directors, that Wilson came as one of those friends, but he was a friend who was kind of an adult in the room who said, you know, I'm here as a friend, but I'm also here as a person who has, you know, I have some standards. I ran a company.
I think that the comment was, it would have been difficult for him to actually fire someone who was one of his close friend's sons. So sort of maybe, even though he was the adult in the room, it was a little bit challenging him to really exercise that independence.
Yeah, we can and get then, to that in a minute. Yeah.
And then one last point, which was a point that I had raised, it seemed sort of consistent with Bradley's personality that he just assumed at the end that his former partner's wife was going to vote along with him because she had collected a sort of juicy insurance policy and really didn't take the time to actually get her views to see if she was really on board with the way he was running the company. And that was also a flaw in his personality. And with that, Phil, Craig, Supriya, does anyone want to jump in? Did I represent our views correctly, or is there something I missed?
You did an excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe one additional thing is that we found that the spend on the marketing was not really allowed. And I mean, because he is so powerful as an owner in the company, and that also led to its decline.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next group.
I'll go. It was, I'm Doug Ferguson, and our group was Pete, Rocket, Anna was there looking at us from her picture, but hadn't read the case, so listened very intently. Amita Soni and Jerry Schofield. I think, you know, we largely cover a lot of the same ground that Robin talked. Interestingly, though, I'd say on the very first question of should Dr. Dunbar join the board, I think we all said, why would she? Or why did she? Given the fact that she had some insights into the place, and there's a lot of structural issues that are red flags from the, you know, point that the board doesn't have any real power because they don't have any true authority over the founders. Plus he's a domineering personality and so forth. This has had a bunch of red warning signs all over it from the get-go. So you have to kind of wonder what it is that motivated somebody to want to join. So a lot of time sort of talking about, well, why doesn't the board step in and fire this guy when it's pretty clear that, you know, he's a source of the problem. And, you know, what was the board cowed? Did the board not have enough power because they didn't have the votes? What were some of the mechanisms that could have been introduced anyway? You know, should they have tried to hire an outside firm to do an independent analysis that could have put some squeeze on them? Could they have tried to bring in some other people in some of the other positions? So there was a fair amount of creative thinking about what do you do when you don't have a whole lot of explicit power, but what do you do implicitly? And I think that, you know, at this, you know, by the time it's collapsed, it's often too late to do anything. I mean, this is, you know, you're dealing with a place that doesn't have a lot of assets. And so a lot of what we were talking about is trying to speculate about why they didn't step up when they should have. Amita, Jerry, Pete, Anna, what would you like to add?
Oh, no, good recap, Doug. I think we're left with the quandary of the declining value of the company, that it, you know, it was worth a lot of money at $100 million, but declined to pennies per share at the end. And that made it hard to create new options. Who can you attract into essentially a sinking ship? So I think that element stalemated some of the future initiatives.
Yeah.
Good job, Doug.
Yeah, nice job, Doug.
Just reflecting the conversation.
Next group.
Yes, we felt very similar to the previous group. Risk associated with joining for Dunbar is moderate to high. Just given it's basically a group of friends who were on the board, and including, and this is my own personal commentary, including Mr. Wilson, by the way. So it's a small hand-picked board. I work for a company that had a very similar situation. They were a publicly traded company, and they always got terrible governance marks because the board, while they were quote unquote independent, in fact, all had relationships with the founders of the company. So they were a little less independent than one might have liked. But Barry weighed in and had an interesting perspective given his background as a psychiatrist, as well as a Sloan MBA. He felt like he could take a run and potentially convince Bradley that he should reconsider his position and be open to maybe making some changes that would improve the company. And we felt that that was fair. As far as when you fast forward to 2019 or wherever we are, and we're trading at pennies per share, we had a lot of soul searching to do and looking in the mirror as to why did we let this happen if we've been on the board all this time and basically watched this thing go down. And personally, none of us felt like we would have allowed that to happen. But it puts us in a difficult position to be able to do anything. And Mark raised the point. So I was in a group with Mark, with Babs, with Jim, and with Barry. And Mark raised a point around, okay, my cash position is probably pretty bad at this point because we've been losing money for a while and revenue is declining. So we're going to need a significant cash infusion. And we didn't have time to talk about where exits any kind of an option, but that was some of my thinking in terms of, is there anything that I could potentially sell, assuming that I could get Bradley to agree, or is this thing just going to implode and leave a pile of dust? So Babs, Barry, Mark, Jim, anything to add? What did I miss?
No, you covered it all. I think the one thing we kind of concluded is that the board really dropped the ball in 2017 when they confronted the CEO and blinked. And that was a really damning situation for the board. And, it seemed to me that if it were me, I think I'd have resigned from the board at that point rather than let it go on, because it was clear at that point, it was pretty clear that a change was needed, and you still had a little altitude and airspace, but by the time you got to 19, you clearly don't.
And Mark brought up, would I have D&O insurance if I were on the board? That might be a consideration too.
The other thing we talked about was the COO who left being a real problem because there's no succession planning in place. So even if you want to get rid of the CEO, who's going to run the place? And finding someone with those unique skill sets at short notice may be very, very difficult.
One more group out there.
Yeah, so the fourth group, we sort of just explored the several of the big picture questions, like how much leverage do you have as a board when the founder is a major shareholder? We talked about that for a couple of minutes, recognizing that in that situation, the founder has the power to fire the different board members. I think we also agreed that there were signs early on that Mr. Bradley would be a problem, but we were sort of discussing the balance of not liking his style, but at least for a few years, looking at how fast the company was growing. So we talked about that for a bit. In terms of the questions, we sort of went back and forth on whether Dr. Dunbar should join the board. Given the insight she had, we suspect that maybe she shouldn't have, or wondered why she should. At the same time, the sentiment was made that maybe she thought she had the skills to help. So I'm not sure we came to a final conclusion on that. But we also said that at a minimum, she should have had robust discussions with all of the other then present board members in making a decision. On the second issue, was the board remiss in not terminating Mr. Bradley? I think we all agreed that it was. The only question is when, and we came to the same time frame as was just referenced earlier, around the 2017 time frame, particularly when that shareholder meeting didn't go well, and there was a threat of a proxy fight. And we sort of also discussed, the role of a board as the as a company sort of slides down into a zone of insolvency to the extent that it eventually got there, which it may well have since it was on the pink sheets. But there's an argument from a legal standpoint, at least, that if you're going to resign as a board member, you should do it sooner than later, because I think you reach a point of no return as a board member when a company is in the zone of insolvency or insolvent, because the court sort of view you as abandoning ship, because as a board member, you have, are supposed to have some influence over the company, but when the company's insolvent, the residual constituency is really the creditor body and not the shareholders. So you want to get, I think you want to come to a decision before you reach, the company reaches that point of view. And we also discussed the some of the issues with D&O coverage. Does it exist? If you're in the zone of insolvency or the company is near Chapter 11, can you get it? Can you afford tail coverage? There are a lot of issues that arise once you sort of cross the Rubicon into an insolvency world. And I was with Mindy and Peter Sherlock and John Ella, so they can fill. I'm sure I missed a few things on those points.
Well, one thing we talked about was the technology was at one point very good, and then the competition really took over. So that ultimately, I think Jerry pointed that out as well, is that there was really nothing there in terms of, you know, they weren't innovating and they were kind of being eaten up by their competitors rather than building, having something that they could sell if they were going down.
Mm-hmm. It's somewhat easy to understand the decision not to take him out as CEO while the company was growing very rapidly. But once it turned and they had the consultant's report and years of experience in his bad behavior, ability to keep the COO, et cetera, while it still would be difficult given his ownership, I think if they had given him a choice of resign or accept an outside turnaround consultant to take the lead and try and get the ship righted, that might have been a way to save the company. Doesn't mean that he'd have allowed that, but at least they'd have done something instead of nothing as they did.
So, Bob, how did our board members do vis-a-vis what actually happened in this particular case? Would you like to facilitate a little further and talk a little bit about what happened and what things you saw from our board members that were good and handled, or things that the board itself missed at the time in that company?
Well, the board did miss, and it did blink. There was no doubt about it. And I think that there was a period where Wilson, who was a real person, did in fact have some initial conflict, having, you know, come to the board as the friend of the father of the CEO, but he did announce, pretty early on that I am going to feel free to tell you whenever I disagreed, but telling you whenever I disagreed to a person who feels very free to tell you, despite the fact, by the way, there was a very interesting dynamic because the CEO is a fairly young man, and the person Wilson, who I'm referring to, is, he's a gentleman businessman. He is a very sophisticated gentleman, successful CEO of not only the New York Stock Exchange Company, but having left that, and because of some interchange between myself and a Japanese company that I was very close to, had become the CEO of a new founding company in the computer space, and through the efforts of the Japanese company, took the company within a short period of time from $5 million to $800 million, showing once again that this was not a incidental player as a CEO.
Jonathan had asked me earlier, how old was the CEO? Do you have the real data on that?
This is something that starts beyond graduate school. I would say this starts at age 30s and ends up by the time the company goes to the pink sheets in the early 50s, age-wise. Okay. So we're talking about, by my standards, very young people. The issue, and this is a real situation, and the company is, in fact, if you turn the clock back 10 years younger than the actual case that I wrote, the issue becomes one of I think it was Mindy who made the point that capitalized on what was one of the most important points. They began to run out of technology runway, and they would not listen to the need for additional marketing and product development. That was a very, very important part of the failure of the company. And there was plenty of room left because the technology that was there, and because it was a different case, it was not lifting people out of their beds and making other hospital things move. It was in a different space and technology. There was plenty of geographic room for this technology to work. It needed marketing and it needed geographic disbursement for that to happen. But there was the issue of, I don't want to spend any money. And that became a very big contention between the CEO and the board. That became an issue of, I'm going to see how far I can stretch this out. And that also became a contention. The board became quite upset, but it was the initial board when the COO that was hired, who resigned, he resigned in front of the board, the early board, the board that was sort of transitioned out. And they were kind of concerned, but they were concerned as the board of friends that, didn't really have they didn't have any kind of appetite to confront him except to say, there's another decision that you made that we recommended that you hire the CEO, and now that it failed. And they weren't going to confront him. The new board, I can't say what would have happened because it would have been hypothetical. The new board consisted, let me jump to this because I think it's very important. The new board actually, which consisted of Dr. Dunbar, shall I say now about Dr. Dunbar? I think I'm going to do this. I think it's very important. I'm Dr. Dunbar. I'm sorry. I had more hair. A higher pitch voice. But Larry said in the case, forgive me, and this is where we evolved over the case. I wrote the case and I was in the case. And Larry said, no, we have to have some diversity in the case as we reveal it. So I want you to become female. For diversity, I want you, Nadel, to become, Dr. Dunbar. And so we have a female in the case. And I said, that's fine. I mean, I have no problem with that. I mean, we can do a lot of that wherever you want. He said, no, Dr. Dunbar can be fine. And I was Dr. Dunbar. Dr. Dunbar was in the following quandary, okay? Wilson was my mentor. And Wilson begged me to join the board. He said, I need an ally. I need another person in the room who will help me to sell my ideas and to be someone else who will help me with the governance issues in the room. Now, if you remember in the case study that there was a report that was issued by Dr. Dunbar previously, which sort of explained to the early board that there were these different defects that Dr. Dunbar had found, that they weren't paying attention to previous reports that actually had been written to them by previous suppliers. That was actually true. In this particular case, Microsoft, Dell, and Gateway, because I'm bringing you back 10 years into a different technology, as potential purchasers of their products, had all written critiques of their sales process, their manufacturing process, their supply chain process, and things of the sort. And when we did the additional, when we did our additional analysis, or an analysis of this before I, Dr. Dunbar, when, you know, had an opportunity to even think about joining the board. This was the consulting assignment that we did. And when we were finding out about, you know, tell us what's been going on in this company. And we discovered that there had been these recommendations. We said, can we see them? And they reached back onto the top of a shelf and had to blow away about 6 inches of dust. They had actually never read these, you know, they kind of looked at them, read them, put them up on the top of a shelf and said, what do they know? Literally, that was the reaction. What do they know? And why would they know how to tell us how to run our business? But that wasn't they talking. It was really Bradley talking. And, you know, that was kind of the arrogance of we know how to run our business better than they do. And they've been buying our product all along. So what makes you think that they won't continue to buy it, you know, once we continue to improve upon our product? And I want to point out that, you know, when you talk about additional adults in the room, my partner at this point, and I will use a real name here because it makes an impact, my business partner at that point, a guy by the name of Jeffrey Bernstein. Jeffrey Bernstein, keep that name in mind, was the first cousin of Sandy Solomon Bernstein, of Bernstein, an adult in the room. I mean, a serious financial guy who had one other credential. He was also a military guy who understood the entire concept. He was a US Navy captain who had been the attaché to the senior general in charge of Laos and Vietnam during the Vietnam War. I mean, if you want to talk about creds and whatever, and when Bernstein talked to Bradley about certain things, if you want to talk about a serious adult having a conversation, it was like they didn't connect. They, you know, because one adult was trying to talk to someone who just wasn't interested in listening. And I went back to Wilson to talk about that. I didn't think, using a little of my psychological training, I went back and I said, I don't think anything is going to work here. And he begged me to join the board to help figure this out. And we had a replacement because on the new board was the CEO of another CEO of a successful company.
And so Bob, yeah. If our board members thought it was going towards insolvency and they talked about, was it happening? What did happen to the company?
Okay, I'm going to tell you that. Okay, I'm going to get to that right now. We offered, because the company, remember, the company had gotten to $105 million actually. And the stock price was $15, and it was trading, and it was considered to be a successful company. And we offered to make him the non-executive chairman. And someone had said this before, it was very well articulated by one of you, to give him all the things he liked to do and make one of our board members, who was also the CEO of another company, which right now is doing very, very well to this day, the CEO, and to allow him to be the operating guy who looked at all of those things that would help to run the company on a financially successful basis and allow Bradley to do the fun things that he liked to do. He said, I will do that if you pay him $90,000. So we took that back to the CEO and he said, I'm not gonna run this company for $90,000. He said, you know, I have a successful business. He said, and I can't drop that or do each half time. So basically what the current CEO Bradley was saying was, I'm making you an offer, you know, you're making me an offer I can't refuse. You know, that expression, I'm probably mixing up my grammar here, but he was basically saying, go to hell. you know, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to really let you tell me to do only the fun things. I'm not going to let go of it. Mm-hmm. And at that particular time, the board did say, we therefore have no choice but to tell you that we want you to step down and we will do what we want. And that's when he said, do it and I'll have a proxy fight. And I know in my own head, because he was a very smart guy, I know in my head I can win the proxy fight. And the board blanked. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And that was.
And is the company still around or has it completely closed? Well,
as I say in the case, it dropped and dropped and dropped. I mean, you know, they started to have no more money for whatever. And, you know, kind of in the case, it's a parallel. And the CEO did, you know, all of the things that you could be afraid of if you're a board member. You know, he basically took the company to the pink sheets. Therefore, they didn't need a board anymore. So the board, you know, by the way, I, Dr. Dunbar, did resign. This was in 2009. I said 2019 here, but it was 2009. I said, well, the hell, I turned to Wilson and I said, you know, the hell with this. I mean, if we're not going to have any influence, so I was the first one to resign because I had a major practice. I was doing this while I was running a major practice, 2009. I was running my own business by that time. And I said, I'm not going to do this, you know, as a favor to you anymore, because it's no longer a favor. And shortly thereafter, he took it to the pink sheets. The rest of the board was dissolved, basically. He no longer had the expense of paying board members. He no longer had the expense of, you know, filing SEC reports. He no longer had the expense of meeting, you know, independent public accountants. He could hire a small third-tier accounting firm to do what he wanted. And today it trades for, depending on the day, somebody might buy a few shares just to speculate with it between a penny and a half a penny.
Wow. Thank you, Bob.
500 million shares outstanding or something like that. So it's...
Thank you for an interesting case. And my role as timekeeper and just kind of bring everybody together. But that was a very complicated and interesting case. And I think people enjoyed the discussion. So thank you very much for bringing it tonight and your participation and your facilitation of the case. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next month in October, our meeting will be October 28th, and Dr. Fogel is here. Barry Fogel is going to be one of the facilitators. You are an external director of a family business. The CEO and founder is exhibiting signs of cognitive decline, but refuses to discuss it with his daughter, who's the COO of the company. So the daughter, who's the COO, comes to you as the outside board member for advice. And our facilitators are going to be Dr. Barry Fogel for Brigham and Women's Hospital and James Toomey from Harvard Law School. And that will be on Thursday, October 28th, just before Halloween. And I hope that you will all be able to join us. And thank you for attending. And Bob, thank you very much for facilitating tonight.
Can I ask Dr. Fogel a question?
Sure.
Does he know Eric Nadel?
Heard of the name, yeah.
Yeah, my son in emergency medicine, the vice chair of emergency medicine.
Yeah, well, you know, bumped into each other in the corridor a few times.
Okay, just say hello next time you bump.
Right, well, just to say, encourage everybody to show up next month. This is not going to be some trivial case of somebody who's incompetent. The chief executive is still going to be doing some smart things, making some good decisions, doing some creative things, which makes it much harder to deal with than if he was simply incompetent. Not incompetent at all, simply has a different perspective because he's older and his mind works differently, not necessarily incompetently. So hope you'll show up.
Right. Looking forward to seeing you all next month. And have a good month and a wonderful fall and autumn. And take care. See you all.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Nice job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice work, Marianne.